Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing Christmas tree inflation, headphone trends, and asinine hospital bills.
That's right. It's Friday, Black Friday, in fact, and we've got a lot of great stories for you that we're going to dissect, and we're going to talk about how they have to do with you and your money. But before we get to those stories, Joel, last week you touched on the fact, like you had to file your first homeowner's insurance claim, and we talked about me checking my rates and seeing how much I could save by bumping up my deductible from $1,000 to, I don't know, maybe $5,000, even $10,000.
Glad that conversation prompted you to relook at what your deductible was because you've been overpaying, sir.
I think I said I was getting hosed. That's truly how I feel. You know, like when you find out that you've been overpaying for something, you just feel kind of sick. Or at least you and I do.
Yes.
That it physically affects us in that way, which is like why I immediately sent that email off to make sure I could remedy that problem.
And you started like throwing up in the trash can in the corner. I'm like, uh-oh.
Dry heaving. But here's the thing. I did hear back from my insurance agent, and I've got some numbers for you. If I bump up my deductible to $5,000, which, by the way, I swear that's where it was until they snuck one past me and decided to bump it down to $1,000. But regardless of that, if I change it to $5,000, I'm not even going to say back to, I'm going to save $430 a year annually. If I bump it up to a $10,000 deductible, I'm looking at saving $670 every single year. So that's a savings of 20% for the $5,000 deductible or 30% on that $10,000 deductible, man. What do you think about that?
Ooh, I think those are both really big savings numbers.
Yeah, and so I was impressed.
Either way you go, you're going to save a whole lot of money over the $1,000 deductible. And like we said last week, I think by bumping up that deductible, it actually is going to prevent you from making really small homeowners insurance claims, which aren't good for your premiums, which just are what you want to avoid anyway. So, I mean, I think if I were you, I'd be willing to go dial it all the way up to the 10,000. Well, because
I'll tell you why I'm hesitant, because I crunched some more numbers.
Okay.
Right? Because it comes down to like essentially where's the break-even point?
Right.
Because yes, I can immediately start saving money now, but how long will I have to go without a claim in order to make up that difference?
Oh, okay.
Right. And so with the $5,000 deductible, I would have to go 9 years. After that 9 year point, then I'm making money. That's when I would be saving money on top of the amount that would potentially go towards a deductible.
Gotcha.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yep.
For the $10,000 deductible, you're looking at 13 years. And that is, I don't know, man, like I'm starting to look into the future a little bit, and I'm not going to predict anything, but like, can you imagine? I mean, obviously I don't want to make a claim, but when it comes to your homeowner's insurance, like who's to say that there's not going to be a massive thunderstorm that rolls in, drops a bunch of hail, and all of a sudden I'm looking at replacing my roof.
That's true.
Or that same storm might take down one of these giant oaks that we've got in the backyard that could potentially damage the house a little bit as well.
Yeah, you got to decide how much you're willing to self-insure, the gamble you're willing to take.
It's not a slam dunk decision, I guess, is what I'm getting at here.
I think definitely moving it up to at least $5,000.
Yes, I'm definitely going to do that. I think the real question is can I stomach, that additional, I don't know, something about 13 years. It's like, holy crap, that's more than a decade.
Well, how long have you been a homeowner now?
Almost
13 years, probably. And have you filed a homeowner's
insurance? I've never filed a claim, but so there's a lot to keep in mind here, but it's just one of those things where it's different with your auto insurance, right? Because we've got a chipped windshield. No problem. We've had that for years. Doesn't bother me. Somebody bumped us in the parking lot at Aldi and drove off. They didn't leave like a note or anything. We came out to a little scuffed up bumper. I don't mind that. Like, I can live with that. But when there's damage to your house, oftentimes that's something you need to get fixed. And especially if it's going to be a larger amount. Like, those are those instances where you want to take advantage of your homeowner's insurance.
Yep. It's a tough call. But I'm glad you're going to at least move into one of those money-saving options.
Yep, definitely going
to
do that.
Just kind of continue to have my fingers crossed for you that you don't have to file a claim.
Yes.
And I hope I go at least 13 years without having to file another claim.
Are you going to keep yours? Because you're at $5,000.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stay there for the time being.
But work for you.
I might look in to see if there's especially if premiums start to rise. Might see if I can save even more by bumping that up. We'll see.
That's true.
But definitely something to look into. And Matt, it's nice to know and nice to put some figures to the amount that you can save. Because, $500 a year is quite a lot of money.
That's real money.
And there's a lot of our listeners out there who can self-insure, and they don't realize that they're potentially throwing money of that magnitude out the window.
There you go.
And Matt, one more thing before we get to our Friday flight. We're doing a book giveaway.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've done one of those.
Since people are spending money in droves today, hopefully not our listeners, we wanted to give away something free. And so it's all free. Yeah, it's been a while since we've done this, a Raid Our Bookshelf giveaway. This is where we give away a bunch of books that we've been reading from guests that we've had on the show. So just head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast, leave us a solid review, and then email us at howtomoneypod@gmail.com, confirming and letting us know that you left that review. Just do that before Wednesday, December 1st at midnight, and you'll be entered into the book giveaway, where we'll be giving away a bunch of books to three lucky listeners. And just remember, if you've left a review in the past, it can be an old review. Like, you can still enter this giveaway, but you do need to send another email. So yeah, if you've already done that, email us again. You're entered to win too, and we'll announce the winners on next Friday's episode.
That is right. I'm excited to get some of these books into the hands of our listeners, man. Let's keep moving. Let's talk about some of the stories we came across this week. Real quick, this is like a halfway story, I guess. It seems like crypto is going even more mainstream. What's your take on the Staples Center changing their name from the Staples Center to the crypto.com arena?
Well, crypto.com had $700 million of those dollars to get that to get their name up there, I guess, in the lights in Los Angeles. I guess I just kind of wonder, I'd be curious from like a PR standpoint, if those dollars are well spent, and if those, I was like doing some research to see like how do companies do after they, you know, make one of these major buys for the naming rights for a stadium.
I'm sure it varies.
Yeah, it varies, but yeah, there's definitely some evidence to show that it's not been good for a lot of companies. So it'll be interesting to see
Staples
how this works out.
Seems to be doing okay. They're doing much better than Enron did. Enron Field, and was it Houston, the Astros that used to be?
Oh, that might have been.
Well, so I mean, my thoughts are that, like, obviously crypto fans, they care. They probably think this is totally awesome. But like, even if you don't care, even if you only really know about it because we're talking about it, the fact that it's a part of our dialogue, like it's a part of the zeitgeist, you don't have to necessarily care to have that impact you, you know? And so, you know, this company, crypto.com, like their name is going to be on, you know, that arena now, and folks are going to, it's just in their minds, instead of it being at, you know, the LA Lakers here at Staples Arena or Staples Center, now it's going to be crypto.com. And so obviously it just gives it more credence, right? And what's interesting too, I think, is the fact that it's crypto.com and it's still on the nose. And first of all, I think people are probably going to drop the .com. Like, folks will just probably call it like the crypto arena.
Yeah.
Which gives credence to just cryptocurrency in general. And so I think it's just really interesting that it could, I really do see this as being a way that more folks are kind of turned on to crypto being a legitimate thing. It's becoming a part of more traditional brick and mortar institutions, you know, like literally there's a building with crypto on it, as opposed to it just being something that's just made up of ones and zeros on computers.
Yeah, it's kind of like how Facebook got more and more mainstream. Like, your grandma eventually was on it and you're like, what's going on here? And I think, yeah, maybe this is like a step in that direction.
Oh, totally.
Too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, let's keep moving. Another quick story, too. I wanted to talk about Christmas trees because, obviously, it's the Friday after Thanksgiving. You and your family, y'all going to get your Christmas tree up this weekend?
That's the plan.
well, of course, you don't want to get your tree up too soon. Otherwise, you'll be sweeping up a bunch of mounds of pine needles, which is kind of a terrible way to end the year.
Yeah, by like December 20th, you're like swooning.
Because, I mean, that's what the experts say. If you have your tree set up before Thanksgiving, you're much more likely to have it all dried out by Christmas. So I'm glad you've waited at least until this weekend.
Yes, well, I think if my wife had her way, we would have had it set up in like early October.
Did she ever Mariah Carey blasting in the background as well?
Oh yeah, already. And we normally go with a live Christmas tree. But we actually bought an artificial one last year.
Oh, no way.
And I'm kind of glad though, because I saw the stats this year, and apparently artificial Christmas trees are going to cost 26% more this year.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought y'all had a real Christmas tree last year.
No, we did, but I bought it literally right after Christmas.
Oh,
the artificial
nice.
One on sale.
Was it on sale?
Yeah, and good. I was like, yeah, next 3 years, let's go with artificial. And she was saddened, but
she was?
Agreed.
Dude, I'm telling you, so last year was the first year that we had already had it. And so last year was the first year that we just got it down from the attic. Now I'm telling you, it was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
To not have to go out and pick through a bunch of wrapped up Christmas trees that you can't really tell how they look and all that.
Yeah, if you were actually going to like cut it down with a with a chainsaw or something like that?
If we lived in North Carolina, it would be not a chainsaw. You do it with a handsaw, like old Charlie Brown style.
Chainsaw all the way.
Nostalgia.
I prefer to upset all the other families who are traditionally cutting down their Christmas tree. But yeah. So just seeing that made me like just glad that I got it last year. But that's just a word to the wise. Apparently, real Christmas trees aren't immune to inflation either. They're supposed to cost on average 5% more this year. So depending on what you're into, Christmas trees aren't as cheap as they were last year.
Plus, I'm sure you can always get like some Christmas tree essential oils for your diffuser there in the house to make it smell like there's a live tree there.
Exactly.
For you. So we've got to talk about Black Friday, just at least for a second here. If you decided to open your podcatcher this morning, maybe before going out to do some physical shopping or before you popped open your laptop to start shopping, we just want to remind you to stay calm. We're not opposed to buying stuff, and we are fans of paying less for the stuff that we do end up buying. But it's just so easy to get carried away on a day like today where you're just spending money that you haven't budgeted or money that you just flat out don't have because of the savings that you have available to you. But it doesn't matter what the discount is on that item if you can't actually afford it. Keep that in mind, please.
Yes. Definitely take a chill pill. Don't overspend. And it's just really like this today, this weekend, Cyber Monday. Like these are the days where it tugs at our wallet strings the most to try to buy things that we can't afford because it's on sale. But the best way to spend less is to not buy anything. And one of the things that's driving the inflation numbers that we're seeing actually is the reality that Americans as a whole have been buying more stuff. Supply constraints are obviously still a major reality, but demand increase is a big part of it too. And so, the more we're buying things, the more it's going to cost us. But even more importantly, it impacts how much of the money that we keep in our own personal bank accounts. And there was a recent headline, Matt, from the Atlantic, and it was like a really, really short headline, and it read, "Stop shopping."
It's a great headline.
Yes. And it made, made a good case for this novel idea that maybe we should just be content with the things that we have and focus less on buying new stuff. And there's definitely a whole lot of that we can agree with, right? We just had Meg Norman on this past week, and obviously she would agree too. And she probably could have written that article. And so there's just so many reasons to buy less. Pick whichever one works for you, whichever one you're into, whether you're like, I just want to see that headline inflation number go down, or I want to see more money in my bank account. Whichever one it is, the macro or the micro, being focused on spending less this season is a good thing.
Yeah. And again, we're not opposed to you buying stuff. We just want you to specifically avoid that mindless, soul-numbing spending that you do maybe because you're bored or because you just don't feel quite as good as you did last week. Buying more stuff is not the solution. And Joel, speaking of buying less, there is this Wall Street Journal article, and it stated that wired headphones, that they're cool again. Those expensive AirPods that just came out are apparently pretty lame now.
So last month.
Dude, I gotta say, I'm kind of confused as to why headphones have to be a fashion statement at all. Why can't we just use the headphones that you have until they break or until you run over them with a car, which is what I did. That's a great time to then purchase a new set of headphones. But we just want folks to stop paying attention to the different trendsetters out there, because you're going to end up buying the quote unquote cool thing. And then 6 months later, you're going to revert back because suddenly it's not cool anymore. We don't want you to buy something just because other people are doing it, or even doing the opposite where you're buying something because somebody else isn't buying that thing.
Right.
This is just another little PSA to encourage you to spend a little bit less this season.
I feel like headphones are and should continue to be a utilitarian item that helps me listen to the stuff I want to listen to, not some sort of statement about my creativity or like my inner being, right? I guess that doesn't make any sense to me. So when I saw the headline, I was like, okay, well, I guess at least the trend is back towards like cheaper headphones.
The more affordable ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's say you bought the AirPods and now you're like, oh, but all the cool celebrities they're using the ones with wires.
They're going with the old cheap
headphones.
That's
just no reason to go back or really to make any decision at all.
Yeah. I will say the cheap, old school, old fashioned white headphones with a cord going up, what that communicates, I totally understand, which is when you see somebody with headphones and like, especially when they're white and they kind of stand out like that, you know that they're either talking to somebody on the phone or they're listening to a podcast or an audiobook, and you don't talk to them.
Yeah.
So I totally appreciate the desire maybe to swing back towards wired headphones because of what it communicates to people around you. I don't know how many times I've had like my little small ones that fit inside my ears that you can't see because they're black and they're little. And then someone will just start talking to me and I'm like, one second, like, hold up my finger, like kind of pop them out, hit pause, that kind of thing. And so I guess I'm just saying, I bet introverts are more into the traditional corded headphones.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And I'm still a fan of the Aftershocks bone conduction headphones.
They're pretty great.
Those are the best.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about, while we're talking about Apple, let's talk about some more big news. Right to Repair is now becoming a thing on the Apple, in the Apple orbit. And yeah, Apple is finally throwing iPhone users a bone starting at the beginning of next year. Apple fans are going to be able to make repairs using legit Apple parts and tools. Although Apple is still encouraging most folks to utilize actual professional service providers. They say, don't go this alone. You need the help of a professional, but you don't have to.
They're making a concession.
Yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, they're starting with the most recent phones, the 12 and 13, and they're going to offer service manuals as well as special software that's needed to enable some of these repairs as well. And this is just a great step, Matt. You and I have kind of moaned about the reality that cell phone makers don't want you repairing your own device, and it costs you a whole lot more when you break that screen or when something goes wrong. And you know, you've talked about fixing your own screen using a website like iFixit and what they offer, which is great. But this is just a great first step to make it easier for folks to repair their own phones, saving them money in the long run by lengthening the life, hopefully, of that phone, and they can keep it around longer.
Yeah, not only saving money, but just the decrease in e-waste as well. You know, like, I feel like this might be the beginning of a move towards us seeing our phones in particular less as these disposable devices that we toss out every couple years, and instead like see them more as like long-term appliances, like something that we maintain and we preserve and we repair when a little part goes out, and we keep them for, you know, at least 5 years. I like the direction that we're going.
Yeah, how bummed would we be if we had to replace our dishwasher every 2 or 3 years?
Oh my gosh,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, that'd be, we get super frustrated, but yet we do that with cell phones, and I think you're
it's
right.
So
I think
true.
Thinking of them more as a long-term appliance that we're trying to get extra years out of, it's a good headspace to be in.
That's right, man. We've got a few other stories we're going to get to, including electric vehicles, how they can save you money, as well as how you can pay less for medical services. We'll get to those and more right after the break.
All right, we're back. It's the Friday Flight. We've got a few more stories to get to on this Black Friday. And Matt, of course, in the beginning of the second half of every Friday Flight is our ludicrous headline of the week.
That's right.
And this one is, and I quote, "Avoid stocks and bonds in 2022, says Morgan Stanley." And this was sent to us by listener Thomas, who I'm sure at this point knows well our hatred for these sorts of prognostications. So Thomas, thanks for sending this one our way.
He's like, oh, Joel and Matt, they're going to love this one.
They're going to tear them to shreds. And yes, we will. They, basically, these Morgan Stanley analysts have said that the S&P 500 is going to be down roughly 5% from where it currently sits next year. I don't know how they know that, but they're making some assumptions. If you've been listening to our show for any amount of time, you know how we feel about this crap. We gave Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a strong ribbing last month as he was predicting a massive stock market decline. Guess what? That didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
Stock market has still been doing really well. And he never seems to get those predictions right. He seems to make one every single year, and he is consistently wrong. And you would think at some point he would stop making them, but maybe he's hoping for that broken clock syndrome where eventually he'll be proved right. and it's not that a sudden decline couldn't happen or that the stock market won't be down at the end of next year, but that headline is just like, avoid stocks and bonds. Like, don't do any investing this year, because guess what? Next year, it's not going to be so good. Well, most of our listeners, Matt, are long-term investors. They shouldn't care about these predictions. And even if the market is down 5% next year, they should keep investing, dollar cost averaging the entire time, because they're hoping to make those withdrawals decades down the road.
That's right. Ignore the headlines and keep on investing. Joel, can you think of anything else right now that is as hot as electric vehicles?
No, not really.
Probably not, right?
Yeah.
Rivian, the e-truck maker, they went public a few weeks ago, and the stock price was soaring, and that's all despite the fact that Rivian has delivered only a handful of vehicles.
Like dozens.
Oh, seriously, yeah. There were a ton of good jokes on Twitter about Rivian's valuation being just way higher than most other car manufacturers that have actual cars on the road that have actually had success in generating profit. But with gas prices still being crazy right now, the enthusiasm around innovative electric vehicle companies is sky high. But you might be wondering, like, how am I going to save money by driving an electric vehicle, because those, you know, those vehicles typically cost more, like a lot more, to purchase upfront than their gas-powered cousins. But going electric can save you a boatload over the entire ownership cycle. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Yes. Yeah. So obviously a lot of hype over the Rivian IPO and a lot of massive swings in the price of that stock over the first couple of weeks. But yeah, Matt, I like that we're getting down to brass tacks of how this actually affects consumers. And I think as you see gas prices continue to skyrocket, an electric vehicle starts to look more and more appealing, right? And the Wall Street Journal crunched the numbers about the energy costs you're going to incur if you did opt to go the electric vehicle route and you ditched your gas-powered car. Basically, if you drive 200 miles a week and you choose to drive an electric vehicle instead of a gas-powered one, you're going to save between $500 and $900 a year, depending on what part of the country you live in. West Coast cities like Spokane, Washington, and Los Angeles were at the top of the heap, largely given the higher prices at the pump out there, right? In California, you're paying close to $5 a gallon. Mm-hmm. So an electric vehicle obviously is going to be even more helpful out there than it is where we live, which is what, we're like $3.40?
Right. And electricity is more affordable up there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So where you charge matters a whole lot too, right? Just like getting coffee out, it costs a boatload more than making it at home. If you're charging at chargers out there on the road via like a charge point network or something like that, you're going to pay more than if you were just charging it at home. And so, yeah, here's the thing though. We don't think you should go out and buy a new electric vehicle tomorrow. And you know what? If you tried to buy a Rivian, I don't even know if you can right now. Like we said, they've literally only delivered like 80 cars. But depending on where and how you drive, it might be worth considering an electric vehicle in your future. And you might just be able to find an EV that works perfectly on the used market too. You don't have to go out there and buy a new one. But if you were to kind of make a swapsie, because gas prices are starting to like get you down and you do drive more than the average person, then yeah, trading one used car for another one that's going to save you potentially over $1,000 a year just in energy costs alone can make a lot of sense.
That's right. And, you know, not only how often you drive, but like you said, specifically where you drive, because I will say an interesting part of the Wall Street Journal article too is that they crunched the numbers if you're driving along the highway where you would be more dependent on charge stations. Because if that's the case, if that's the kind of driving you do, the savings actually disappears and it's actually a little bit more expensive to go with an electric vehicle on the highway. But the thing is, we tend to overestimate like how often that we're going on these road trips. We think, oh, what am I going to do when I have to go visit my in-laws over Christmas? That's going to cost us a lot more. But I mean, come on, how often do you do that? That's an annual trip. It happens, you know, once. And so if you are paying maybe a little bit more once or twice or even a few times a year, that doesn't quite balance out with the daily savings that you would have from your daily commute. And so that's something to keep in mind as well. Joel, let's talk about hospital prices just in general, because they continue to be a topic of great consternation in our country. But the problem is that your bill, it may be completely arbitrary. Oftentimes, not only are the prices incredibly high, but they're kind of made up.
Pulled out of thin air.
Yeah. And again, the Journal, they did a deep dive on that very topic recently. And it's something we've covered on the show before. Because sadly, medical bills cause millions of Americans to file for bankruptcy each year. And that's largely because of this opaque pricing and billing system that is almost impossible for even incredibly smart, brilliant folks to understand. In a recent article in the LA Times, they drove this home as well, because they documented how this hospital charged more than $800 for a boot for a broken foot when that exact same boot cost $80 on Amazon. So this is an instance where we have to kind of look at the facts. Things are getting a bit absurd.
Yes. Yes, they are. And you know, it's not that we don't want you to pay for medical care that you've received. It's just that you want to make sure that you're getting the absolute best price that you can, because obviously $80 sounds better than 800, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, if there's anything we learned in our recent conversation with Marshall Allen, it's that you never pay the first bill. And that was actually the title of his book, Matt. And so, yeah, it pays to be patient, right?
We at least
right?
learned that lesson.
Yes. I read at least the front of the cover. And yeah, thank you, Marshall, for that. But it takes time for hospitals and insurance companies to sort things out. There's a lot of ping-ponging back and forth before the final price is agreed on. And so it takes a minute for you to get the actual bill in your hands. And if you pay the bill too soon because you just like to take care of things, knock out your bills quickly, there's a good chance you're overpaying.
That's right. Yeah. So it pays to be patient. And there's a pun in there for folks as well, I guess. And also beyond that, you know, just beyond waiting around, it pays to be proactive as well.
Oh, those are like two opposites, but I like it.
Patient and proactive.
Where are you going? Come on.
Well, you know, when you get your bill, you want to look over it and you want to make sure that the services that you've received, that they match up to what is listed out on the bill. And so if you're having just a tough time understanding what they're even charging you for, you want to make sure to ask for an itemized bill. Every line item should ring a bell as you read over it. And if it doesn't, then it's definitely going to be time to call the hospital.
And they're like, we charged you for that once we knocked you out, actually, for a couple hours.
That's pretty sure I was conscious the entire time.
That's when we did all those services.
Yeah. And so whatever the number that's listed out on the bill, that's a good place to start. Since this is what they're doing all day, they're just talking to people who have questions about their bill. They know how the hospital charges, they know the ins and the outs, and they should be able to walk you through your bill so that you're comfortable and you know what's going on. And also, while you have them on the phone, this is also a great time to see if there is any assistance that you're eligible for. Again, you're not trying to get out of paying altogether, but hey, if there's a discount available, we want you to jump on it. First of all, make sure that you are paying the right amounts, but then beyond making sure that you have an accurate bill, let's see if you can find a way to get that down even more.
Yeah, and sometimes, Matt, we've talked about this before, there are specific rules for financial aid eligibility. It's on the hospital's website. All you got to do is find it, Google it, get to that page on the hospital website, and they will, in plain English, tell you exactly what it takes to qualify for either partial or full forgiveness of the medical debt that you've incurred. It depends on your income so much of the time whether you're eligible or not, but you can proactively look for that info.
You might qualify.
Yeah. And if you haven't listened to that episode with Marshall Allen, it's episode 409. We would say give it a listen.
Yeah.
You know, I wish it weren't this hard. I wish it were a little bit easier. But he gave so much good advice for fighting back and winning if you do find yourself in the possession of an outrageous medical bill. I just love his approach, and it's just so helpful as you walk people through something that really, like, I hate that we need to know this, but we need to know it. Mm-hmm. And so
he just attacks it with just such a like a old school journalist mentality as well. He's just like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this and I'm going to help you.
Yes, and he really did. And it's a really helpful book. Speaking of which, we're doing the book giveaway, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is one of those books included in that Raid Our Bookshelf giveaway. And so, yeah, make sure to leave that review on Apple Podcasts and enter in. Send us a screenshot at howtomoneypod@gmail.com. We're going to give away a bunch of books to a few listeners. And so make sure you get entered in.
That's right. So we hope that you enjoy this wonderful holiday weekend, hopefully with folks that you love, whether that involves watching some football, eating some pecan pie.
Those leftovers are the best.
They just get better, right? Until maybe like the sixth or seventh time you've like nuked the turkey.
It dries a bone.
At that point, I don't know if you can redeem it. But we appreciate you listening. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.